Red Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Hello and welcome to Fred Film Radio. I'm Amani Mohammed reporting from the 71st Venice International Film Festival. I'm joined now by Ron Mann, the writer-director for a documentary here in the Venice Classics section called Altman, and it's about the life of Robert Altman. Ron, I didn't know how fantastic this film actually really was going to be. I didn't know too much about it other than it's about the life of Robert Altman, a fantastic American auteur, a real innovative director of our times. And I was curious about the film because not only are you a jury member here as well, but congratulations on being the only Canadian film also in the selection. But what I really wanted to tell you is that I love the way you started the movie. I spoke to Catherine Altman and also Michael Murphy, who was one of the most prolific actors that worked with Altman throughout his career, and you start the film with this adjective to describe this director, and it's as simple as, what is Altman-esque? This is a question that you pose throughout the film, and I really loved the way it started. I think it's a perfect way to start the film, but what gave you the idea to begin the film like that?
Well, I didn't want to make a conventional film about an unconventional filmmaker. I wanted to really have Bob tell his life story in his own words. And, you know, conventional documentaries will have celebrities, you know, talking about who slept with who and illustrating it. I didn't want to do that. I actually saw Wim Wenders' Pina, and which I quite liked. But in the end, I thought, wouldn't it have been great to have, you know, Pina Bausch to talk about her own work? And so that was the real inspiration for having Bob narrate the film and then have up front and have the people who are interviewed sort of as introductions. And the other thing is, you know, it's hard to compress Robert Altman's life into 95 minutes.
You did a fantastic job, though. I mean, I didn't know how much one could cram into a 90-minute film.
Right. I mean, there's 65 industrial films, hundreds of hours of television, almost 40 feature films. That does, not even touching on him being a painter or directing operas. And I think the actors were, and you know, the cast and crew of Altman's films who are briefly introduced the movie, you know, all adored Bob, and they adored Bob because the way he made films was completely different. He involved them creatively. The actors went off script. The crew contributed to his vision of the film. And for me, you know, he was a very, you know, unconventional, but also he reinvented cinema and the language of cinema and how we look at films and how they're made.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, hadn't seen all of his earlier work, but certainly, you know, the films from maybe the late 80s and onwards are films that I have looked at and since gone back, revisited films. But what I really admire about Altman, of course, he's always pushing the boundaries. He was never about making a conventional film. He always wanted to be almost what auteurs are often so ahead of their time that they're not appreciated at the time that they're alive, and then sometimes they're just, you know, revered after they're gone, which is a sad thing, but also a good thing because it means that the work lives on.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I mean, he was fired every 5 minutes when he was on television, you know, and so he basically broke the rules for, and, you know, if you look at films like Boyhood, by Richard Linklater, or David Gordon Green's film, which is here in Venice. I mean, you could see, you know, that the, you know, how Bob's works lives on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other thing that I thought was interesting was when you're using, it's very busy here, when you're using the talking heads throughout the film, you obviously Did you choose specific people, or did you, for example, I mean, Lily Tomlin, these are all people that worked with him, Bruce Willis, Michael as well, Michael Murphy, and also, can I just say, Robin Williams as well. I think, I don't know if you're aware of this, but in the press screening, there was a huge sigh when we saw Robin talking about Altman, and he says, expect the unexpected. For me, that was such a poignant, almost... the irony of the whole thing was incredible, and I'm sure obviously that was not pre-planned, but what was it like meeting him? When did you meet Robin?
Well, it was one of the last interviews. It was Robin, you know, was asked the question, and he came up with a number of actually answers. One of them was expect the eclectic, actually. he was incredibly funny. He also spoke for about 30 minutes about Bob, and you know, Bob gave Robin the first opportunity to be in film. Prior to Popeye, Robin was on Mork and Mindy, a TV show in the U.S. and
show that I absolutely loved.
Yeah, and it's like Shelley Duvall, like Michael Murphy, Bob, Lily Tomlin. Bob discovered talent, and what he was looking for was truthful human behavior. He didn't want actors to act. He was after, you know, people and genuine, you know, what is it about? You know, he allowed them to go off script, and he allowed them to be themselves. And being part of
the creative process is almost like the biggest appreciation you can give without saying, I appreciate your work.
Right. And you know, I have to say this. The thing about the movie is that, and even the reason why I used the Altman-esque definitions, is that you can't label Bob in one way or one definition, because we can talk about Bob's improvised work, but yet the work in the 80s was all the script printed in the Samuel, you know, French booklets. So a lot of the theater work was straightforward. Joan Tewksbury's work in Thieves Like Us is almost verbatim to the book, the novel, the adaptation of Thieves Like Us. So one thing that you can say about Altman-esque is that it's unpredictable. But ultimately, for me, it's about heroic, independent filmmaking. And it's the courage to make those kinds of films. And that it is possible. What I think in the end you're left with is that it is possible to make good movies.
Yeah.
Standing in contrast to the way Hollywood makes films, which is, you know, these days only sequels and comic book movies.
Well, they seem to garner the most amount of money, but...
And they're formulaic. You know, you go to film schools and they're teaching you that on page 15 there has to be, an explosion and page 20, there's a car chase. And so Bob just didn't, you know, he allowed films to breathe and portray people as they really are. And stories, he didn't actually disdain the word story, but that, you know, that it has its own uniqueness, I guess. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect
enough description.
That's a perfectly usable word. I mean, in terms of Altman, did you meet him? Did you have a relationship with him? Or was he somebody that totally inspired you and that you just simply wanted to make a film about?
Well, I had a great affection for Bob, watching his movies in the 1970s, films like MASH and California Split and Nashville. I mean, that period, of, you know, characterized by the new Hollywood, was very exciting. I grew up in that at that time, and there was a freedom where the filmmakers were making the decisions and making the films, as opposed to today, where it's all marketing and driven and accountants are running. We're talking, though, about the studio films, you know, because the Bob's trajectory was about independent filmmaking. He says in the movie, "They, you know, I make gloves, they sell shoes." So it's, but in the, you know, and so he wasn't making mall movies. But the kinds of I've forgotten already what the question. So because I
was just asking if you knew him personally.
Oh right, okay. Remember, okay. And this is a good segue because I made a film called Grass, which was about marijuana prohibition, which is why I couldn't remember your question. But the only time I ever met Bob was on the letterhead for NORML, which is a national organization to reform marijuana laws. Bob smoked pot every day and was on the advisory board, and so was I. And I would see his name on the letterhead, along with Hunter S. Thompson. But that was the only time that I met Bob. I did, you know, we were both, quote, given the Maverick Award in 2003 at the Toronto Film Festival. Unlike an Altman film, actually, that I didn't run into him.
A pity, but he made an incredible film. I mean, just finally, I wanted to ask you about the use of home videos in the movie, because, I mean, I learned so much about him, so much more that I didn't know, just about his professional life as well, about the formation of Lionsgate. I didn't know about that. I love the fact that he really nurtured his talent. He nurtured the people he worked with. He really seemed to genuinely have, you know, care about that. You know, he even his boys got involved with production, which I think is incredible that they get to work with their father, you know, on his movies, and they'll always have that legacy, you know, of working with their dad. But the home videos really add such an incredible layer to the film, because you really feel the humanity of his life. You know, it completes the life, because we see his professional life, but you don't often get to see the personal stuff, the home videos and the children and you know, those kind of things. I love that a bit of footage of him watching everybody at dinner. It's such a wonderful moment that I felt like I could have been there in the room.
Well, I mean, if you want to know where the personal informs the work, and if you want to know where overlapping sound comes from, just have dinner at the Altman House.
Very good point. Very good point. Did you always intend to use those videos? It must have been quite a mission to get those together.
No, I was very fortunate. Most filmmakers don't have this opportunity where there's so much material, I felt that Bob left a trail for me to follow. His archive was at the University of Michigan, and I thought I was going to spend a week there, and I wound up spending the entire summer with six assistants scanning hundreds of thousands of photographs that he had left. And yeah, it was amazing to actually be in his world. There were over 400 hours of interviews that I had found in the archives. It was a bit of detective work. I actually tracked all the interviews that he gave at film festivals for every one of his films, and contacted the festivals, or I contacted, you know, the radio stations or the television stations, and was able to put together a chronology of Bob talking about his work that way.
Yeah.
It gives you a personal, intimate look of Bob's work as a family man. Mm-hmm. As Lily Tomlin says in the film, he created a family, and he created it on the set. And his family was incredibly warm and close. And what I was amazed by was Catherine. I mean, I was in awe of Catherine, and adore Catherine. You know, it takes a... It's very difficult living with a filmmaker. It takes a special person, and Bob found that special person. I mean, it's a cliche to say behind every artist there's, you know, the great woman, but the cliches are there for a reason. And, you know, she was able to keep it together. Make sure all those drinks were, you know, everybody's drink was, you know, filled. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Ron Mann, the director of Altman, for bringing us such an incredible documentary to Venice Film Festival. It was the first documentary I've seen here at the festival, and it's so charming and so wonderful to see a part of Altman's life that we haven't yet seen. So it's really unique, just like the man. So thank you very much for bringing that to us.
Thank you.
Thank
for
you. Saying that. I'm Imani Mohammed, reporting for the Venice International Film Festival for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.